uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Josh Reeves, thanks for being here with us for another late night Moonbat edition. And yes, indeed, we're going to be getting Moonbatty with you here tonight on the show, as we always do. My website where this broadcast originates from is theglobalreality.com. It is Tuesday, April the 3rd into Wednesday, April the 4th, 2012. Thanks so much for being with us here tonight. And we've got a lot of news and information to cover with you here on the show. We'll see if we have any emails or not. I don't know if we have very many. We haven't been getting in a whole lot lately. But if you want to send in emails during the show or later, or stuff you have questions about or want to hear me talk about here on the show, theglobalreality.com is the website. But there's a contact tab up there, and there you'll find my email address, which is globalrealityshow@gmail.com. That's globalrealityshow@gmail.com, and that's where you'll find my email address, where you can send in questions to the show. If you've got things you want to hear me talk about, topic suggestions, comments, any of that stuff, that is where you'd send it to Global Reality Show. Global Reality Show at gmail.com. Hope you're all doing well out there. Not going to be too many live shows this week because I'm going to be going out of town, and we're going to be going to shoot footage for the new, I'm calling it the Rockwall film, but it's not just going to be just about the Rockwall. I mean, I just don't have a name for it yet because it's not just going to be about that. I mean, it's going to be about these various ancient societies and civilizations within the southern part of the United States that all seem to worship the feathered serpent, Quetzalcoatl, and, of course, America, Amaraca, which literally means the land of the serpent. And so I think we're starting to see an expansion of why these ancient societies have been covered up, why the knowledge of them has been covered up, why they don't like people sticking their noses in it and looking around at it, why people will try and persuade you to not look at that and focus your energy on other topics and everything else. Oh, worry about the race baiting going on. Worry about the bankers. And that becomes a whole hell of a lot more interesting when you think about these. You know, the fact that the ancients seem to know quite well who the real gods are, just like the elite that run the show do today. But they give us these misrepresentations and they give us short-sighted information. But, you know, that's been going on forever. Ever since there was an establishment of a hierarchy of priests that were going on ancient religion, ancient information that was handed down to them by the gods, that gave them the ability to be able to have in secret rites and rituals that differed from what the public at large was being shown and being given access to, and the rest of it. And we saw that throughout history. That's why religion became so powerful. It became powerful because of the restriction of that knowledge. And the same thing is happening today through, just in a different form, and it's doing that with the phony truth movement, the phony conspiracy movement, to get you, you know, oh, look over there at the Jews, and look over there at the blacks, and look over here at these, you know, Bilderberg group members and these bankers. But don't ever look over here and look where the real power is, because when you do, we're going to start to call you names. And, I mean, it's just a fact, folks. Those type of people who try to dissuade the story away from who the real controllers are. I don't care who they are, large or small, you know, Alex Jones or small or whoever, you know, whether they got 20 million followers or two followers. I don't care who you are. If you try to cover up that fact and try to cover up the fact that the tyranny that has enveloped us has come from the result of a religious system and a religious hierarchy who has gained its power on the restriction of knowledge and the restriction of information that is supposed to be used for the enlightenment and for the furthering of our species, but has instead been used as the ultimate enslavement tool. And I stand here today and tell you and say that to all those people out there who refuse to talk about or tell their followers who the real power structure is, I say you are no better than the enemy. You are the enemy. You are colluding with the enemy. And there seems to be a rash of that as of late, and everybody seems to be just falling into the race-baiting shit, and it's happening on all levels. It's happening in the mainstream with, of course, the blown out of proportion race baiting inciting Trayvon issue, and then it happens in the alternative media with you know, people just you know, going on along on the Jew thing. All of these things have been traps set for us, ideologies set for us by the priest class controllers to get us to fall into their trap. I talked about in the Secret Right Volume 2 this Myron Fagan, this guy who had, who Anthony J. Hilder had worked with. I noticed Chris Everard recently had Anthony J. Hilder on his radio show he's doing on Oracle now. And, of course, no mention or no questions about the stuff I talk about in my film. Of course not. But he Hilder also worked with Myron Fagan. And I had found this quote where, and I hope to get this in a later, you know, edition or something of The Secret Right, but Myron Fagan had met with some of these alleged Zionist writers of the early 20th century, guys like Israel Cohen and George Bernard Shaw and stuff like that. And these guys were also members and founding members of the Fabian Society, Israel Cohen, George Bernard Shaw, Israel Zangwill. You know, here's Myron Fagan hanging out with these guys. These guys, the founders of the Fabian Society. And as we know, the CMP and the CFR and all these groups were all funded and controlled by the Fabian Socialists. And look, I mean, their logo is a wolf in sheep's clothing, folks. And here's Myron Fagan, one of the most, you know, renowned, respected, because he called out the Jews. And so all the, you know, Jew World Order people just love Myron Fagan. He was working with Hilder, and he was, you know, watch Secret Right 2, and you'll see the stuff in there. I talk about Myron Fagan. Helped Hilder put out those vinyl records about the Illuminati and all that stuff. So here we have one of the, you know, more prominent people involved in the 60s, what sort of the conspiracy, you know, Jew anti-world order conspiracy movement was at that time, meeting and having dinner with people who, I mean, Israel Cohen is the guy that allegedly said, we're going to get the whites to, instill white guilt in the whites to exploit Negroes, and then we're going to, let them rise to, you know, fame in, sports and being singers and entertainers and stuff. And then that'll allow the Negroes to be able to intermarry and start. Let me find that quote. I got it here somewhere. Israel Cohen, from his book, A Racial Program for the 20th Century in 1912, said, "We must realize that our party's most powerful weapon is racial tensions. By propounding into the consciousness of the dark races that for centuries they have been oppressed by whites, we can mold them to the program of the Communist Party. In America, we aim for subtle victory while inflaming the Negro minority against the whites. We will endeavor to instill in the whites a guilt complex for the exploitation of the Negroes. We will aid the Negroes to rise in prominence in every walk of life, in the professions, and in the world of sports and entertainment. With this prestige, the Negro will be able to intermarry with the whites and begin a process which will deliver America to our cause." And it's interesting that here's Myron Fagan, this guy who's a mentor and a hero to many conspiracy theorists and truthers, and he just happens to be hanging out with guys that write stuff like what I just read. And these top Zionists, and he's hanging out with these people who are connected to mind control and connected to the right-wing extremist John Birch Society groups. I mean, you said Myron Fagan had connections to the John Birch Society, Eight Ways to Sunday. Hilder did as well. And here he is cavorting with these guys who were the founders of the Fabian Socialist Society. I mean, you know, that just does not look good. And so for that reason, the people who always try to take the conversation back towards it's all the Jews, to me, you know, when you hear that, and you hear them, when that's, you know, they say that that's, you know, that's it, that's all there is to it. Well, you should know right then and there that they're working for the very enemy they claim to be against. And that's just the way it is. So thanks for being with us here tonight. Again, my website, theglobalreality.com. We have a chip-in banner that's up there, and it's only runs until Friday. It says Rockwall Film Travel Budget on it. It's for $500. We need to meet that goal by Friday to help cover the cost of the... Because I'm going to... let's see. I'm going to, like, I don't know, five or six states in a span of just a couple of days, and I'm going to be doing a lot of shooting and stuff, so it's going to be a lot of traveling, and we need some help to cover the expenses of that. It's only $500. Here's the deal. Everybody who donates $100 or more to this by Friday or before Friday, or it runs out. It runs out Friday, so you'll need to get them in before Friday because it'll probably run out in the middle of the night like they always do. So, everybody who donates $100 or more of that is going to get their copy, deluxe package, whatever it ends up being when it's done and out of this film, the Rockwall film, Ancient Society film. And everybody who anybody who goes $500 or more is going to get that package, as well as get a production credit as a co-producer on the film. And there you go. So please help us reach that goal by Friday so I can cover the cost of doing this and make sure that I don't get, you know, fucking stranded out there in the middle of it. Because, you know, we'll meet the goal. I don't want to get on the road and be out there somewhere in the middle of bumfuck nowhere and, not have the resource I need to do it. So please help us meet that goal by Friday. TheGlobalReality.com, it's down there. And you can also use the donate button to support our work. The chipping banner is there. all those things. We're going to start blowing through some of this mound, no pun intended, of news tonight. This really struck me as interesting, and I had a listener send me an email and say that they had heard some stuff like this, you know, that may have been possible, may have happened, I don't know. But, you know, there's been all kinds of speculation around 9/11 and around the fact, well, things like Shanksville and the coroner that showed up at Shanksville for Flight 93 said he stopped being the coroner as soon as he showed up on the scene because there was no blood. He said, to this day, I've never seen a drop of blood. There was nothing there. And a lot of people who have claimed that the whole thing was a hoax and that there, you know, weren't actually real people inside of those planes, and all those planes were unloaded at, I think, NASA, maybe the NASA Ames facility somewhere in Ohio or something like that. All the data, all the passengers were taken off those planes and made to walk and evacuate the place. So there's been speculation that they may have filled up these planes with cadavers and just flown them in by remote control, but I saw some terminology here in this article that really sort of sent a light bulb off for me in that way of thinking, as far as, you know, is it possible that yes, you know, the whole thing was a lie. They just flew these airplanes by remote control into the buildings and there weren't even people on them, and all the people that they've gotten to act like they, you know, their family members died on the plane or actors. A lot of them I've seen look like actors. But listen to this terminology that they use. Air Force debated disposable of 9/11 remains. Newly released Pentagon documents show that Air Force officers debated briefly about burial at sea before concluding that 1,321 unidentifiable fragments of remains from the 9/11 attacks at the Pentagon should be treated as medical waste and incinerated. Now, they're talking specifically here about the Pentagon. And so there's another spot. Again, no bodies, not a drop of blood, not anything. But is it possible that they could have crashed some sort of drone in there and had, because they said they should be treated as medical waste and incinerated and shouldn't, and this is at the time when it happened, and not be treated as body parts, but be treated as medical waste instead. A string of emails running from August 5th to the 7th, 2002, reveal that an unidentified Air Force colonel suggested scattering the already cremated remains at sea. A second official, a civilian, and said it may be appropriate to have witnesses and a chaplain present. Their argument that the 9/11 remains weren't just normal waste were rejected by others who concluded that the material was medical waste and should not be treated like human remains. Now, that's pretty unbelievable, folks. The Air Force argued that the remains should be treated as medical waste and not treated like human remains. Why would you do that? Medical, treated like medical waste, not treated like human. They're still human remains, aren't they? So that's interesting. They're using that. They would use that terminology to officially classify it that when normally... one of the biggest things about the whole 9/11 thing to me, you know, and I don't talk about the 9/11 thing much anymore, but still the whole boggling thing to me is the fact that nobody seen in the whole fucking world seems to have a problem with the fact that, you know, 9/11, this was a crime scene. Even if it was, you know, if somebody comes over from another country, no matter what that country may be, if somebody comes to the United States from another country and commits a murder, do we automatically not do what we normally do as far as gathering evidence and putting together a criminal case for prosecution? Do we not normally, I mean, do we not always still do that? In some cases, even more. I mean, if you come over to the United States from a Muslim country, and you murder an American, oh, goddamn, well, you'll be in Gitmo by morning. If you make it that far, if you're not strung up by some, you know, Muscovite, So in this, one of the biggest crimes committed ever on American soil, there was no evidence collected. Evidence in many cases was destroyed. They had all of the steel shipped out. And so for the lack of the gathering of, I mean, in any crime scene, things like body parts being scattered all over the place would not but just be treated as medical waste. But it just goes to show you how we as a planet, really, not just we as a country in the United States, bought hook, line, and sinker the case they made and sold us with 9/11 without even having to present any evidence as you would in a case. You know, normally it would be, okay, here's the event, here's what happened, let's put the pieces together, put all the evidence together. And when we do that and we have our main suspects, then we'll present our evidence to try those main suspects. And then once we have that, we'll know what to do and go from there. We didn't do that, though, did we? Nope, we covered up the evidence. We destroyed the evidence. And then we told people why and what they should think. And they sold us. And we bought it, and the rest is history. Richard Branson made this offhanded remark, and everybody said, "Oh, he's such a funny guy." Oh yes, Richard Branson. Yes. When you get to be a billionaire like Richard Branson, you have such a funny sense of humor that no one else has. Yes. But I wonder, this motherfucker's crazy, and I wonder if this wasn't some sort of real comment, not just a joke. Because the article seemed to be really trying to push the fact that this was a joke, but this crazy motherfucker, it wouldn't surprise me. But could Richard Branson be heading to the center of the earth and trying to find inner earth? It's very possible. He made a joke. And I wonder how much of a joke it really is. British tycoon Richard Branson may have lost his race to the bottom of the ocean, but not his sense of humor, declaring a faux plan to stop his rivals by voyaging to the center of the earth. The impossible adventure was announced on Friday, tongue jammed in cheek with the seriousness of a real campaign. Of course, you know, that was an April Fool's joke, but I'm sure, but I wasn't here on April Fool's Day, but I'm sure it was. But anyway, it wouldn't surprise me if that crazy motherfucker did that. That's going to be the next, you know, frontier. Now that fucking James Cameron's gone down to the deepest part on the earth, you know, I mean, these crazy motherfuckers, they're going to be looking to do anything just for the sake of doing it. You know, oh, we have $1 billion. Let's drill into the center of the earth and go there. Yes, we'll take it. Goldman Sachs dumped stake in Village Voice Media to avoid ties to sex trafficking allegations. New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof has revealed some information on one of Goldman Sachs' investments that has the private equity firm furiously attempting to control what it apparently sees as potential damage to its image. Kristof wrote in his column on Saturday that the Village Voice Media, which owns a website that he described as the biggest forum for sex trafficking of underage girls in the United States, was itself partially owned by Goldman Sachs. As a result of Kristof's inquiries earlier this week, Goldman Sachs began frantically unloading its shares in that company, and a Goldman Sachs representative has called Kristof on Friday to say it had just agreed to sell its remaining stake in the business to management. A Goldman Sachs spokesman said, insisted, "We have no influence over operations." So, yeah, human trafficking is going on all over the place, and the big boys are doing it left and right, and it's coming out more and more. And I really got a taste of that world and how real it was when I was researching the Jeff Gannon, Johnny Gosch stuff that's in The Secret Right, Volume 2. I mentioned this thing earlier, and you know, everything going to the Jew thing lately, and this Well, what I think these guys are blatant disinfo, honestly. This website that did the came out with the Alex Jones works for Stratfor crap. I think Jones is probably funding this stuff, to be honest with you. I think he's funding this fake bullshit to muddy the waters, because I think I and other people like myself who put out this stuff about Jones, I think we've hurt his credibility so bad that he's now have to put out bullshit disinfo about himself to try and make the stuff that I've put out seem like it's off base. And you think this motherfucker wouldn't do some shit like this? You know he would. But the same clowns that put out this Stratfor thing have now put out this 10 reasons why Alex Jones should be tried for treason. And nowhere in here, in any of these 10 reasons that they give are, of course, number one, Stratfor intelligence operative. Right, no proof of that whatsoever. Number two, Operation Endgame. Number three, the stochastic terrorist. Number four, the Y2K beta test. Number five, assassination of Bill Cooper. And really no way to prove that either. I mean, it's possible. I mentioned that in the film, too. Alex Jones goes COINTELPRO at the Austin gun rally. That's pretty obvious. Terror predictions. Norway terror alerts, up-and-coming bioterror attack, denial of Zionism, the millionaire truther, Super Bowl nuclear terror plot. That's it. No mention of his connections to the Jesuit order. No connection of his connections to the John Birch Society or the Council for National Policy or any of these secretive right-wing think tanks. None of those stuff. But back to the old thing of Alex Jones is bad because of this. Look, you want proof of his connection to the Zionist stuff. Look at it how I expose him in the C-Rate Volume 2 and his connections to Zionist financiers who finance GCN and all these phony front companies with Adnan Khashoggi. And it's all in there, but people still want to waste their time, you know, supporting this phony bullshit. And yet they don't want to give The Secret Right Volume 2 the light of day. I mean, this film's being hugely ignored yet again, just like Volume 1 was. That's what everybody's trying to do now. I'm fucking pissed off about this. I'm getting sick and tired of it. Everybody is trying to ignore this information because they know I'm right, and I've been right for years, and I've proved that more and more. And now that that's coming to light, people are trying to backtrack away from it because they're fucking scared and they're fucking pussies. Well, buck up and put your goddamn big boy pants on and step up to the table and realize that you've been lied to yet again. Queen Elizabeth asked James Bond to open the Summer Olympics. Well, I saw this and I was like, wow, isn't that fitting? Well, a lot of you may have heard a lot of the stuff that the late Rick Clay had talked about with the 2012 Olympics and stuff. A lot of people believe it's going to be this massive Illuminati ritual. I'm sure it will be. But I just found it pretty interesting that the Queen herself wanted her number one MI6 agent, James Bond, to kick off the Olympics. I just think that's interesting. Kicking it off with James Bond kicking it off, is that going to be like the prelude to a bunch of crazy shit that's going to go down? The Antichrist appearing.
Oh yeah, I love the motherfucking Olympics, bitch. I'm coming down for some Olympics. That's right, motherfucker. I love the Olympics. You know where the Olympics came from. They came from Satan's cock. Yeah, motherfuckers, I am back.
Yeah, go back to bed, Satan. Jesus. Popular astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson on Monday lamented that American culture no longer had a culture of innovation that prized scientific and technological discoveries. Tyson noted on MSNBC that space exploration no longer captured America's attention like it previously had. He blamed the lack of public interest on the lack of advances in the space frontier. You don't have to be the scientist or engineer, he explained. You could be a journalist, an artist, but you start doing more stories about the frontier, and all of a sudden everybody participates in inventing a tomorrow. It's the invention of tomorrow that is absent in today's modern culture, Tyson continued. Tomorrow was everywhere in the 1960s, wasn't it? The World's Fair was all about tomorrow. And who enables that tomorrow? It is the scientific and technological literacy of a nation that does it. It is these innovations that are the engines of the 21st century economy. Well, number one, I can answer that question right here and now for Neil deGrasse Tyson. The reason that nobody talks about that anymore is because these people running the show, folks, they have a very crystal clear picture of what the future is going to be. And it's going to be a technological enslavement grid. And so that's why you don't hear about it much anymore. They're not telling you what the technology is going to be doing 40, 50, 100 years from now anymore, because the real technocalypse is right around the corner. I mean, that's one of the reasons. But the other reason is that they're keeping us in a state of arrested development, intentionally, by design. Keeping us in that state so that we don't progress as a species and we don't progress as a people. Because if we progress too fast, and that's what I think has happened a little bit with all this technology. I mean, we're the reason they're trying to shut the internet down as it exists now is because it has been used as such a weapon against them that now they have no choice but to try and rein it in somehow. So that's one reason, but the other reason is this. This next story, this is from Gigom.com. The singularity is coming. Three chips that meld man and machine. That's why they're not going to tell you, they don't talk about what's coming in the future anymore, because they already have a very clear picture of what it will be, and that will be humans merged with machines. And he who has the most cash and has the most money and most wealth will be able to become so powerful from this technology that they will literally become gods, reigning over poor people unchecked. Cramming biology on silicon is not a new effort, and it's one that has helped advance the science of genomics and led to the $1,000 genome. But in the last few weeks, I've noticed some pretty sweet combinations of biology and chip research. They will first end up helping biological research and test new drug compounds, but in the future might become something out of a Ray Kurzweil, the singularity, the melding of man and machine. You and I might not want a chip that mimics the entire process of a human digestive system, including paratalysis in living bacteria, but folks trying to test out drugs do. Now, thanks to the researchers at Harvard University, they have one. The lab on chip uses two thin channels coated in a biological growth medium and human intestinal cells to create mini intestine that apparently can sustain actual gut bacteria for about a week. A silver voyeur to monitor cell secretions. Researchers at Lee University have developed a biosensor that is so sensitive it can monitor the protein of secretions of cells. It is composed of a thin silver skin on a glass slide that contains two slits. Light shined onto one slit set off a reaction and interference pattern that is captured in red by a special microscope. Each pattern represents a different type of protein, letting scientists understand what's happening and growing inside of their petri dishes in real time. Nanoparticles that build themselves instead of putting a biological process on a chip or creating a chip that measures biological processes, researchers at the University of Michigan have created materials that mimic proteins. These man-made materials act like biological processes and can self-organize in predictable ways, giving researchers new ways to create biomedical devices, solar panels, or even new drugs. The team is working to create nanoparticles that will self-assemble into enzyme-like particles that can be used to catalyze biological and chemical reactions. So we're talking about living tissue made out of nanoparticles that can self-organize, can self-build. So, yeah, to answer Neil deGrasse's question there you go, buddy. Of course, you're not going to hear that talked about on fucking MSNBC now, are you? Let's see what else we have here. Do you guys see this graphic? It looks like something out of, you know, something you see on Saturday Night Live or Conan O'Brien show or something. A computer graphic warning that Al-Qaeda will return soon to New York City has been posted on the internet site linked to the terror organization. You know, I don't know. I mean, something just tells me, it says, Brown says the graphic appears to have been created on Cinema 4 software, which typically costs about $1,600. Yeah, and it's very difficult to make things on that. It requires a lot of computing power, and you're going to have to, I mean, seriously. So Al-Qaeda has some sophisticated graphics people working for them. I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, because I don't know about you, but if I was starting a terror organization, I mean, the first thing I would look for is a good graphic designer, you know? I mean, shit, you may be able to fucking kamikaze jets into airplane into buildings all day long, or, you know, anybody can go into a fucking hotel or an army base with a bomb strapped to them and Allahu Akbar, and set it off and kill them. So anybody can do that, right? But very few people can use graphics programs in that way. And so if I was forming a terror organization, the first thing I would do is get the resumes out. Yes, we see here that you are looking to join our terror group. Okay, what are your qualifications? Well, I like to blow shit up, and I'm really into jihad. And I really enjoy long walks in the park, reading the Quran. And really, I just want to blow some stuff up. Uh-huh. Okay, yeah, sure. We'll get to that. Don't worry. We'll get you to blow some stuff up real soon. Our main question here is, we don't see any qualifications here for graphic design. Do you know how to use any programs like Maxon, or you know how to use any Adobe programs or anything like that? I know how to balance my checkbook on Windows 98. I mean, really? Is that a qualification now? I mean, it's unbelievable. So we're supposed to believe that Al-Qaeda is using all of their processing power and all their money to create these wonderful online graphics to say, Al-Qaeda is coming soon again to New York. Get ready. Well, how do you know they're not coming for a Broadway show, or, you know what I mean? I mean, my God, Al-Qaeda probably likes Broadway and likes, you know, Les Mis as much as anybody else does. Right? I mean, we already heard they're cross-dressing Taliban now, right? Well, okay, maybe we have show tunes liking Al-Qaeda. Maybe that's a conspiracy. All these guys are fags. I don't know. I just know it's fucking ridiculous. That's what I do know. How about that? Jurors in a landmark priest abuse trial heard Monday about a priest-turned-camp prowler and another who allegedly bragged about having sex with three boys in 1 week. Boy, that's good quality. Good quality priests there. Also Monday, two jurors were replaced by alternates, but a gag order prevents a lawyer from discussing the reasons for the move. Monsignor William Lynn is on trial for child endangerment and conspiracy. Lynn, 61, is the first Roman Catholic Church official in the U.S., charged for his handling of priest abuse complaints. Prosecutors say he helped the church bury them in secret files, far from the prying eyes of investigators, civil attorneys, and concerned Catholics. Yeah, I fucked me three boys in 1 week. Woo-hoo! I cornhole me a teenage boy. Praise Jesus. I love it. Play the banjo for me.
Suck Satan's cock.
Tavistock Part 2 Electric Boogaloo. Is the Tavistock Institute planning to run Part D of their biggest, most successful mind control operation, probably one of the biggest, most successful, probably second biggest mind control, successful mind control operation, second next only to Christianity, of course. But of course, that's probably why why John Lennon was making the remark of the Beatles being more popular than Jesus. And now the sons of the Beatles are talking, but this is never going to happen. I don't even know why they're talking about this in the media. It's never going to happen. Number one, let's just go run down the list here. Zach Starkey doesn't want to do it. He's one of Ringo's sons. Zach Starkey is a fabulous drummer. I saw him play with The Who twice about 8-9 years ago. I saw him play with Oasis in 2005. He's just a fantastic drummer. Danny Harrison, a spitting image of George, he really doesn't even really want to play music. And he's really not that great. I mean, he's a good guitar player. His songs pretty much suck. Fall, Macca's son. I mean, what can you say about that? He's the son of Paul McCartney. Jesus. Okay, John Lennon had two kids. Sean Lennon, the seed, half-seed of Yoko. Ugh. Have you heard that guy? Oh, he's a little faggy, little crybaby, little, you know, Greenwich Village, little, oh, man, I don't give a damn if he is half John Lennon. That dude sucks. So I don't even know why. I mean, the only advantage to this would be is if they attempted to do some sort of, you know, Tavistock 2.0 mind control brainwashing thing with the children of that. But I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think they need that anymore. I think they're well past the point of the game of needing any something like the Beatles again, you know? They achieved that, and they have, through the technology and through just the economy, they've completely ruined the music industry and completely ruined the whole landscape for people who are trying to be musicians and trying to play their art and get their art out there. They've killed the club scenes. The club scenes are dead. I don't care where you live. Nobody goes to clubs to see bands anymore, ever. Not very often. Not very many people do. Nobody goes out and sees shows anymore because you can't smoke in any of the clubs. And as soon as that happened, people stopped going to shows. Scientist reveals how he made bird flu that could spread between people. That's just a great article title, isn't it? So are they just flat admitting this now that they cook what we already knew, what I was talking about in 2009 when it was breaking out? That they indeed did cook up this entire H1N1 thing in a lab, and we've known that for years, but I mean, are they admitting this now? A scientist whose work was deemed too dangerous to be published by the U.S. biosecurity advisors revealed for the first time on Tuesday how he created a hybrid bird flu virus that is spread easily by coughs and sneezes. In a conference presentation that was webcasted live to the public, he has detailed how his team created the deadly virus. Professor Yoshihiro Kawakoa of the University of Wisconsin-Madison described experiments that pinpointed four genetic mutations, enabling the virus to spread between ferrets kept in neighboring cages. The animals are considered the best models of how infection might spread between people. In December, the U.S. National Science Advisory Board for Biosecurity called for key sections of Kawaka's work to be deleted from a paper in press at the British science journal Nature amid fears that a rogue state or bioterrorist group might want to use the information to create a biological weapon. No, the people that are creating biological weapons are the people that they're supposedly investigating and against that. The NSABB raised similar concerns over a paper by Dr. Ron Foissier of Erasmus Medical Center in Rotterdam. The study describing another mutant bird flu strain that can also be spread through the air. What they don't want us knowing is that what we're talking about here, exactly what they're admitting to. I mean, my God, how are they trying to baffle us with bullshit? I don't get that. This is about trying to keep us from knowing that these things were cooked up in a lab and weaponized in labs for biological weapons use. And then we just buy it hook, line, and sinker and buy into it. I don't know. I don't even believe the bird flu thing. I think the whole thing was a hoax. I don't think anybody died from it. I don't think anybody ever caught it. I think the whole thing was a cooked-up hoax. And it seems that, as we've talked about recently, the installation of space-based weapons for, you know, under the guise of an asteroid shield or something of that nature, or, you know, in secret to fight space aliens or something, who knows. But more and more top-secret space-based weapons are being launched. A rocket carrying a top-secret payload blasted off Tuesday from the California coast. The Delta IV rocket lifted off at 4:12 p.m. from the Vandenberg Air Force Base, about 130 miles northwest of Los Angeles. We've just seen the successful liftoff of the rocket, launch commentator Don Spencer said in a webcast. Since the launch involved a classified cargo for the National Reconnaissance Office, no details were immediately available about whether it was boosted to its intended orbit. So it's from the National Reconnaissance Office. Oh, shit. Well, the NRO is a group, the National Reconnaissance Office. And the how often they're overlooked and how often they're important and how powerful they are is very often overlooked, even in the realm and scope of people who know a lot about this kind of stuff. But the NRO is super, super, super secretive. Their clearance is the highest. It's even above CIA at most levels. And these are the guys who deal directly with intelligence gathering, reconnaissance, data mining, the works. So they are launching some sort of monitoring satellite. For what purposes, who knows, but definitely trying to keep it under wraps, that's for sure. NSA's huge new $2 billion spy center will be used to snoop on ordinary Americans, warn experts. The National Security Agency is facing claims that its new spy center in Utah will have the power to monitor ordinary Americans. Jesus Christ, they've had this forever. It's just now that everybody has just accepted it, by accepting cell phones and gadgets and computers and everything else that have cameras and microphones on them where they can track us and monitor us 24/7, they are building and expanding the operation. So understand, this is not something that's going to be now coming as a result of building this new building. It's just something that they're expanding on, that they're already doing, putting up bigger facilities because they're going to have to expand operations for the amount of data they're going to have coming in now that everything's just a wide open pipe and they can track and trace everything that goes through an electronic connection. Intelligence expert James Bamford recently interviewed a whistleblower who claimed that the NSA has software that is able to reach through the emails, phone calls, and texts of U.S. citizens in an article published in Wired magazine. But Mike Baker, a former cover field operations officer of the CIA, told Fox News that paranoia surrounding a billion-dollar project was understandable yet exaggerated. Maybe you want to get somebody who was a former cover field officer. You know what that is? Cover. What do they call cover? Like having your cover blown, like an undercover? Maybe you get somebody besides an undercover for the CIA to do your reporting there. You know what I mean? Just a little tip. Got an update on that JetBlue pilot that we talked about last week. It seemed that he may have had some information that, you know, they were about to do a 9/11 style fake terror attack thing or something, because this guy, you know, no history of anything, just goes off. The wife of a JetBlue pilot who caused a midair scare among passengers as he allegedly flipped out during a flight from New York to Las Vegas was standing by her man yesterday as he made his first court appearance. Kanye Osbun could be seen behind her husband, Clayton Frederick Osbun, 49, as he was led to a vehicle by FBI agents from the pavilion at Northwest Texas Hospital in Amarillo, where his flight was forced to land after he allegedly ran down the aisles telling passengers to say your prayers. The pilot, who has been a JetBlue captain for 12 years, appeared visibly distraught during the short walk. His wife was no better, clutching the arm of one of her husband's JetBlue colleagues. NBC News reported that Kanye Osbun mouthed the words, "I love you," as he was escorted out of the hearing on his way to the Randall County Jail. After hearing, federal prosecutors recommend that Osmond, who has been charged with interfering with a flight crew, be held without bond. If convicted, Osmond faces up to 20 years in prison. And this is going to be interesting to watch, because if they throw this guy in jail, you know, in prison for 20 years, that's when this guy had no prior history of mental illness, no prior, been on the job 12 years. If they throw the book at this guy and give him 20 years for this, folks, we're going to know that's going to be a confirmation that this guy had knowledge that something was going to go down, and he was trying to warn people, and they aborted the mission and then blamed everything on him, calling him a lone nut. This stinks to high heaven. It smells of an op that got aborted all over the place, folks. They run these ops all the time, and if one little micron, one little hair is off balance, they'll abort the whole thing. That's how dead set these operators and these people are on making these agendas and plans and operations go to exactly how they see them playing out. Osmond was not asked to enter a plea during the 10-minute hearing. A federal judge is expected to rule on the bond issue during a detention hearing on Thursday. He wore normal clothes in the courtroom, dressed in a green shirt and baggy green pants. He was shackled at the feet. His attorney, Dean Roper, declined to comment after the hearing. Kanye Osmond hurried to a waiting car outside the courthouse after the hearing. But it doesn't say anything. No other quotes from this guy or nothing else to say if he's had a psychological evaluation. That's just unbelievable. That's definitely smell a rat with that one, though. Earth had a near miss on Sunday from a 150-foot asteroid that was detected only 2 weeks ago. It was revealed today. They do that. They love doing that. Yeah, we almost had a big one. Yeah, we almost got wiped the fuck out last night. We missed it only by about 150 feet. Earth had a near the space rock 2012 EG5 flew past Earth closer than the moon in a distance of just 143,000 miles. The asteroid was a diameter of around 150 feet and would have exploded with the force of an atomic weapon had it hit our planet. I still think they're gonna drop the rod of God, the gravity bomb, on somebody at some point and go, oh, that was an asteroid. We're going to have space-based weapons to shoot them things down. Here is the question. If you were on fire, boy, I wouldn't piss on you if he's on fire. Ever heard somebody say that? I wouldn't piss on him if he's on fire. Let me ask you this. If you were on fire, I just dropped a picture in the chat room. If you were on fire, would you want that to save you? I would say let me burn. Look at that creepy fucking dirty looking thing. Jesus Christ. Octavia, the robot, can trundle through flames, taking instructions in sign language from a human handler, and put out fires with a compressed air water hose. There's just one problem. Who would want to be saved by a robot that looks like an evil doll come to life? No shit. What is these people's obsession with this kind of stuff? I mean, it looks like anything you'd see out of some horror movie or Kubrick or something. Octavia was unveiled by the U.S. Navy's research wing and is built to work alongside human firefighters using infrared cameras to interpret or see, and she can also receive voice commands. Creepy fucking, disgusting. IBM building the most powerful computer in history to unravel the origin of the universe. Why so much importance put on this? Because they want to be able to control and manipulate and recreate new realities. IBM is designing a computer which will digest twice as much information every day as the entire internet, sifting through radio waves from space in an effort to unravel the origin of the universe. The machine will be attached to a 1,900-square-mile array of telescope antenna and will be built to suck in radio telescope data, which will see 13 billion years into the past, back to the dawn of the universe and the Big Bang. The machine will be millions of times more powerful than the fastest PCs today and will deal with 100 times more information than the output of the Large Hadron Collider. Ton Ingenbergson of IBM Research says that if you take the current global daily internet traffic and multiply it by 2, you are in the range of the data set that the Square Kilometer Array Radio Telescope will be collecting every day. Upon completion in 2024, the telescope will be used to explore evolving galaxies, dark matter, and even the very origins of the universe dating back to more than 13 billion years ago. It's like, why not? Because we can. Arizona bill could criminalize internet trolling. You guys hear about this? I mean, this is unbelievable. Because how they can classify this is anything that's even, you know, if I get up here and I get on my radio show and I say, you know, Bill Richardson, the guy who used to be the guy from Arizona, you know who he is. He used to be the governor of Arizona. I may still be. I don't know. I didn't keep up. But anyway, he's a Bilderberg Group member and a Bohemian Grove member and all this stuff. But he's from Arizona. No, he's from New Mexico. Never mind. Well, anyway, let's just say that I said all people from Arizona suck big green fat donkey dicks. And they suck Satan's cock, and they take in the ass, and they're complete fucking pieces of shit, and, you know, they all should die a horrible death. Well, apparently now that can be considered trolling and be a criminal act. Arizona marches to the beat of its own drummer, but if that drummer gets upset and starts hollering on the internet, he might get tossed in the clink. Uh-oh, I'm a drummer, and I get mad and holler on the internet, don't I? Uh-oh. After spending years targeting illegal aliens, the Grand Canyon State is turning its sights on obnoxious internet users, commonly called trolls. A new update to the state's telecommunication harassment bill could make the practice of harassing people online illegal. I saw the most epic trolling one time in my chat room. We get some pretty remarkable, special, retarded fucking trolls in the chat room, but... The funniest thing I ever saw, just epic trolling I've ever seen, besides getting rickrolled on air by Troy in West Virginia, that was a highlight. Somebody came in the chat room one night and said, in big bold letters, it said, hello, this is the NSA. We have video evidence of Josh Reeves peeing behind a ditch or behind a bush, and we have photographic evidence that he has a micro penis. That is all. Good night. I'm like, man, I do pee outside sometimes, but I don't have a micro penis. I just don't. I mean, I'm just gonna leave it there. I'm not gonna get into, oh, my dick is so big, because that's bullshit too, but you know, it ain't the biggest, it ain't the smallest, it definitely ain't a micro penis. But you know, I never had any complaints. Let's just leave it there. Anyway, we're gonna take a break, come back, and get into our new series of reading here for you on the show tonight. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. Please support our work if you can and help us. We're still only having, I mean, we got like just a couple of people, not even barely that. Really just one person mostly that is taking care of all of our shipping banners and every month. We need more people out there. We've got so many listeners now. Our YouTube videos are getting, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 hits a day sometimes. Archives. I mean, we've got listeners in 37 countries. And we're only getting support mostly from the United States, and it's from mostly people, one or two people. So we need you guys to help out and lighten the load. Otherwise, we're going to have to start doing things with this network and with this show that I'm not going to like pay to be able to listen, period, at all. Everybody, no exceptions, commercials, ads, all that stuff. So please continue to help out those people who are helping us out. Stay with us. This is The Global Reality. We'll be back here in a few minutes.
I do believe I saw you standing there, sunlight in your hair, reflecting in your eyes.
Uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network. uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
All right, back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network with me, your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being here with us tonight, all you moon batters out there. Appreciate it so much. If you're listening on an archive show later on or on a YouTube video, thank you so much for tuning in as well. My website where this broadcast originates from is theglobalreality.com. That's theglobalreality.com. There you'll find all things pertaining to my work. Documentaries, films, mini films, archive shows, video clips, books, audiobooks taken from books that I've read here on the show, all kinds of stuff up there. You can buy Cigarette Volume 2 on Blu-ray and DVD. It's my newest documentary film. And you can also support our work by using the chip-in banner, the blue chip-in banner for the operating costs. All that stuff goes up here. We've done pretty good. Our overhead's been pretty, it just had jumped up this month. And so the chip-in banner there, that reflects the amount that we need every month to do our work. And then we have below that, in silver, we have the Rockwall Film travel budget. That ends on Friday. We need that amount. Here, that's our goal for the week is $500. Again, everybody that donates $100 or more will get a DVD package of the film for free when it's out and done. Everybody that does $500 or more will get that plus a co-producer credit in the film. So please hit that up and support that if you can. If you have already supported us, thank you so much. We have a one-time donation button there as well. We have a monthly subscription where you can put in an amount, any amount you want, and it'll come out of your account on a monthly basis, and you don't have to come back and donate every month. And I guess I don't mention this enough on the show, so I'll mention it now, and I apologize if I don't mention it enough. But I had somebody send me an email the other night and said, man, I'd support you if you had some other way where I could support you other than PayPal. And we do have that. That is underneath the chip-in banners and the monthly subscription thing. We have a P.O. Box address there. All the instructions are there. You can send checks, money orders, cash, whatever. And then below that, we have, it says Josh Reeves Wish List, Amazon.com. And we have items on there that we need to recruit for our work. And you can just go on there and purchase those items. And I don't even have to put in an address. It just will ship it to me automatically. It's easy and convenient. So if you want to buy a piece of equipment to help out our cause and what we're doing here with the films and the radio show and everything, you can do that, and you'll know exactly where your money's going, and that'll give you the peace of mind of knowing that you bought a physical object to help us out with. So there you go. Any of those ways is how you support our work. It keeps us commercial-free. It keeps us uncensored. It keeps me being able to bring you the information I need to bring you. And I couldn't imagine being in a position to where I couldn't get into the things I wanted to get into, because if I did, I might lose sponsors and then wouldn't be able to keep this thing afloat. And every month, that's what I wrestle with having to try and avoid. So thanks to everybody out there who keeps us going. The astral plane, its scenery, inhabitants, and phenomenon. Picking up tonight on our continued series of readings, starting out with a chapter entitled Inhabitants. So now we're going to be getting into the inhabitants of the astral plane, the non-material realms of reality, spirit world, if you will. Having sketched in, however slightly, the background of our picture, we must now attempt to fill in the figures to describe the inhabitants of the astral plane. The immense variety of these entities makes it exceedingly difficult to arrange and tabulate them. Perhaps the most convenient method will be to divide them into three great classes: the human, the non-human, and the artificial. Number one, human. The human Denzians of Kamaloka fall naturally into two groups, the living and the dead, or to speak more accurately, those who still have a physical body and those who have not. Number one, the living. The entities which manifest on the astral plane during the physical life may be subdivided into four classes. Number one, the Adept Orchella, and the Maya Vipera. This body is the artificial vehicle used on the four lower or Rupa divisions of the Devakanic plane by those capable of functioning there during Earth life, and is formed out of the substance of the mind body. The pupil is at first unable to construct this for himself, and has therefore to be content with his ordinary astral body, composed of the less refined matter of the comic aura. But at a certain stage of his progress, the master himself forms his Maya Virupa for him for the first time, and he afterwards instructs and assists him until he can make it for himself easily and expeditiously. When this facility is attained, this vehicle is habitually used in place of the grosser astral body, since it permits the instant passage from the astral to the Devakanic plane and back again at will, and allows of the use at all times of the higher powers belonging to its own plane. It must be noted, however, that a person traveling in the Maya Virupa is not perceptible to merely astral visions unless he chooses to make himself so by gathering around him particles of astral matter, and so creating for himself a temporary body suitable to that plane, though such a temporary creation would resemble the ordinary astral body only as a materialization resembles the physical body. In each case, it is a manifestation of a higher entity on a lower plane. In order to make himself visible to those whose senses cannot yet transcend that plane, but whether he be in the Maya Virupa or the astral body, the pupil who is introduced to the astral plane under the guidance of a competent teacher has always the fullest possible consciousness there, and is in fact himself, exactly as his friends know him on Earth, minus only the four lower principles in the former case and the three lower in the latter, and plus the additional powers and faculties of this higher condition, which enable him to carry on far more easily and far more efficiently on that plane during sleep the theosophical work which occupies so much of his thought in his waking hours. Whether he will remember fully and accurately on the physical plane what he has done or learnt on the other depends largely, as before stated, upon whether he is able to carry his consciousness without intermission from one state to the other. Number two, the psychically developed person who is not under the guidance of a master. Such a person may or may not be spiritually developed, for the two forms of advancement do not necessarily go together. And when a man is born with psychic powers, it is simply the result of efforts made during a previous incarnation, which may have been of the noblest and most unselfish character, or, on the other hand, may have been ignorant and ill-directed or even entirely unworthy. Such one will usually be perfectly conscious when out of the body, but for want of proper training, is liable to be greatly deceived as to what he sees. He will often be able to range through the different subdivisions of the astral plane almost as fully as persons belonging to the last class, but sometimes he is especially attracted to some one division and rarely travels beyond its influences. His recollection of what he has seen may vary according to the degree of his development through all stages, from perfect clearness to utter distortion or blank oblivion. He will always appear in the astral body, oh, come on. Why is it doing this to me? I lost my place. Give me a second here. God damn it. he will always appear in the astral body, since by the hypothesis he does not know how to form the Maya Varupa. Number three, the ordinary person. That is, the person without any psychic development, floating about in his astral body in a more or less unconscious condition. In deep slumber, the highest principles in their astral vehicle almost invariably withdraw from the body and hover in its immediate neighborhood, practically almost as much as asleep as the latter. In some cases, however, this astral vehicle is less lethargic and floats dreamily about on the various astral currents, occasionally recognizing other people in a similar condition and meeting with experiences of all sorts, pleasant and unpleasant, the memory of which, hopelessly confused and often travestied into a grotesque caricature of what really happened. And it will cause a man to think the next morning what a remarkable dream he has had. These extruded astral bodies are almost shapeless and very indefinite to the outline in the case of more backward races and individuals. But as the man develops in intellect and spirituality, his floating astral body becomes better defined and more closely resembles his physical encasement. Since the physical faculties of mankind are in course of evolution and individuals are at all stages of their development, this class naturally melts by imperceptible gradations into the former one. Number four, the black magician or his pupil. This class corresponds closely to the first, except that the development has been for evil instead of for good. And the powers acquired are used for purely selfish purposes instead of for the benefit of humanity. Among its lower ranks come members of the Negro race who practice the ghastly ritual of the Obe or voodoo schools and the medicine men of many a savage tribe. While higher in intellect and therefore the more blameworthy, stand the Tibetan black magicians who are often, though incorrectly called by Europeans, Dugpas, a title properly belonging, as is quite correctly explained by Surgeon Major Waddell in his recent work on the Buddhism of Tibet, only to the Bhutanese subdivision of the great Kargyu sect, which is part of what many may be called the semi-reformed school of Tibetan Buddhism. The Dugpas no doubt deal in tantric magic to a considerable extent, but the real red-hatted, entirely unreformed sect is that of the Nyingma Pa. Though far beyond them, still in the depth lie the Bonpa, the votaries of the aboriginal religion who have never accepted any form of Buddhism at all. It must not, however, be supposed that all Tibetan sects except the Gogpa are necessarily and altogether evil. A truer view would be that as the rules of other sects permit considerably greater laxity of life and practice, the proportion of self-seekers among them is likely to be much larger than among the stricter reformers. The investigator will occasionally meet on the astral plane students of occultism from all parts of the world, belonging to lodges quite unconnected with the masters of whom theosophists know most, who are in many cases most earnest and self-sacrificing seekers after truth. It is noteworthy, however, that all such lodges are at least aware of the existence of the Great Himalayan Brotherhood and acknowledge it as containing among its members the highest adepts now known on earth. Number two, class of people, dead. To begin with, of course, this very word dead is an absurd misnomer, as most of the entities classified under this heading are as fully alive as we are ourselves. The term must be understood as meaning those who are, for the time, unattached to a physical body. They may be subdivided into nine principal classes as follows. The Nirmanakaya. This class is just mentioned in order to make the catalog complete, but it is, of course, very rarely indeed that so exalted a being manifests himself upon such a low plane as this. When for any reason connected with his sublime work he found it desirable to do so, he would probably create a temporary astral body for the purpose, just as the adept in the Maya Varupa would do, since the more refined vesture would be invisible to astral sight. Further information about the position and work of the Narmikayas may be found in Madame Blavatsky's Theosophical Glossary and the Voice of Silence. Number two, the Chela, awaiting reincarnation. It has frequently been stated in Theosophical literature that when a pupil reaches a certain stage, he is able, with the assistance of his master, to escape from the action of what is in ordinary cases the law of nature, which carries a human being into the devachanic condition after death, there to receive his due reward in the full working out of all the spiritual forces which his highest aspirations have set in motion while on earth. As the pupil must, by the hypothesis, be a man of pure life and high thought, it is probable that in his case, these spiritual forces will be of abnormal strength, and therefore if he, to use the technical expression, takes his devachan, it is likely to be an extremely long one. But if instead of taking it, he chooses the path of renunciation, thus, even at his low level and in his humble way, beginning to follow in the footsteps of the great master of renunciation, Gautama Buddha himself, he is able to expend that reserve of force in quite another direction, to use it for the benefit of mankind. And so, infinitesimal though his offering may be to his tiny part in the great work of the Nirmanakayas, by taking this course, he no doubt sacrifices century of intense bliss. But on the other hand, he gains the enormous advantage of being able to continue his life of work and progress without a break. When a pupil who has decided to do this dies, he simply steps out of his body, as he has often done before, and waits upon the astral plane until a suitable reincarnation can be arranged for him by his master. This being a marked departure from the usual course of procedure, the permission of a very high authority has to be obtained before the attempt can be made. Yet even when this is granted, so strong is the force of natural law that it is said that the pupil must be careful to confine himself strictly to the Kamaloka while the matter is being arranged, lest if he once, even for a moment, touch the devachanic plane, he might be swept as by an irresistible current into the line of normal evolution again. In some cases, though these are rare, he is unable to avoid the trouble of a new birth by being placed directly into an adult body whose previous tenant has no further use. But naturally, it is not often that a suitable body is available. Far more frequently, he has to wait on the astral plane, as mentioned before, until the opportunity of a fitting birth presents itself. In the meantime, however, he is losing no time, for he is just as fully himself as he ever was, and is able to go on with the work given to him by his master even more quickly and efficiently than when he was in a physical body. Since he is no longer hampered by the possibility of fatigue, his consciousness is, of course, quite complete, and he roams at will through all the divisions of the Kamaloka with equal facility. The Chela awaiting reincarnation is by no means one of the common objects of the astral plane, but still he may be met with occasionally, and therefore he forms one of our classes. No doubt, as the evolution of humanity proceeds, in ever-increasing proportion enter upon the path of holiness, this class will become more numerous. Number three, the ordinary person after death. Needless to say, this class is millions of times larger than those of which we have spoken, and the character and condition of its members vary within extremely wide limits. Within similarly wide limits may vary also the length of their lives upon the astral plane. For while there are those who pass only a few days or hours there, others remain upon this level for many years and even centuries. A man who has led a good and pure life, whose strongest feelings and aspirations have been unselfish and spiritual, will have no attraction to this plane, and will, if entirely left alone, find little to keep him upon it, or to awaken him into activity when during the comparatively short period of his stay. For it must be understood that after death, the true man is withdrawing into himself, and just as at the first step of that process, he casts off the physical body and almost directly afterwards the etheric double and the prana. So it is intended that he should, as soon as possible, cast off also the astral or chemic body and pass into the devachanic condition, where alone his spiritual aspirations can find their full fruition. The noble and pure-minded man will be able to do this, for he has subdued all earthly passions during life. The force of his will has been directed into higher channels, and therefore it is but little energy of lower desire to be worked out in the Kamaloka. His stay there will be consequently very short, and most probably he will have little more than a dreamy half-consciousness of existence until he sinks into the sleep during which his higher principles finally free themselves from the chemic envelope and enter upon the blissful rest of Devakin. For the person who has not as yet entered upon the path of occult development, what has been described is the ideal state of affairs, but naturally it is not attained by all or even by the majority. The average man has no means freed himself from the lower desires before death, and it takes a long period of more or less fully conscious life on the astral plane to know the forces he has generated to work themselves out and thus release the higher ego. The body which he occupies during this period is the Kamarupa, which may be described as the rearrangement of the matter of his astral body. Now, that's interesting. Let me read that again. I don't want to just blow over that. That's a very important thing there, and something I've found on my own experience, but to see it written down, I want to go back over that. It says, the average man has by no means freed himself from the lower desires before death, and it takes a long period of more or less fully conscious life on the astral plane to allow the forces he has generated to work themselves out and thus release the higher ego. Now, that's a very important statement, because what they're saying here is exactly what I found to be true, is that when you don't know about the deeper elements of information, and you just take the world at face value and what Fox News and tells you and what the schools taught you and everything else, if you just take the world at that level, and that's it, you just operate your life thinking that there's nothing else to life, and that's it, and you're an atheist, and you know, there's nothing's being hid from us, there are no conspiracies, then you're going to have to reincarnate over and over and over again until you learn and get it right. But if you become conscious of this during this life, you'll be able to release the higher ego, meaning when you don't have an ego and are not in this realm concerned with material goods and money and wealth and all this stuff, and you're strictly searching for the truth, even though that may not be accepted and seen as weird by our society in the world in which we live, you are actually serving yourself by being that way, because you are learning the lessons that allow your higher self, your higher ego, your true self, your spiritual self, to be released and forego those reincarnating realms again and go into higher dimensions when you enter the astral plane. And that's talked about in many ancient texts, like the Tibetan Book of the Dead and others. The body which he occupies during this period is the Kamarupa, and which may be described as a rearrangement of the matter of his astral body. But it is much more defined in outline, and there is also this important difference between the two, that while the astral body, if sufficiently awakened during life to function at all freely, would probably be able to visit all or at any rate most of the subdivisions of its plane. The Kamarupa has not that liberty, but is strictly confined to that level to which its affinities have drawn it. It has, however, a certain kind of progress connected with it, where it generally happens that the forces a man has set in motion during earth life have need for the appropriate working out a sojourn on more divisions than one of the Kamaloka. And when this is the case, a regular sequence is observed, commencing with the lowest, so that when the Kamarupa has exhausted its attractions to one level, the greater part of its grosser particles fall away, and it finds itself in affinity with a somewhat higher state of existence. Its specific gravity, as it were, is constantly decreasing, and so it steadily rises from the denser to the lighter strata, pausing only when it is exactly balanced for a time. This is evidently the explanation of a remark frequently made by the entities which appear at seances to the effect that they are about to rise to a higher sphere, from which it will be impossible or not so easy to communicate through a medium. And it is a matter of fact true that a person upon the highest subdivision of this plane would find it almost impossible to deal with any ordinary medium. It ought perhaps to be explained here that the definiteness of outline which distinguishes the Kamarupa from the astral body is of an entirely different character from that definiteness which was described as a sign of progress in the astral of the man before death. There can never be any possibility of confusion between the two entities, for while in the case of the man attached to a physical body, the different orders of the astral particles are all inextricably mingled and ceaselessly changing their position after death. Their activity is much more circumscribed, since they then short themselves according to their degree of materiality and become, as it were, a series of sheaths or shells surrounding it. The grossest being always outside and so dissipating before the others, this dissipation is not necessarily complete. The extent to which it is carried being governed by the power of Manas to free itself from its connection and its connection with any given level. And on this also, as will be seen later, the nature of the shade depends. The poetic idea of death as a universal leveler is a mere absurdity born of ignorance, for as a matter of fact, in the vast majority of cases, the loss of the physical body makes no difference whatsoever in the character or intellect of the person. And there are therefore as many different varieties of intelligence among those whom we usually call the dead as among the living. The popular religious teaching of the West as to man's post-mortem adventures has long been so wildly inaccurate that even intelligent people are often terribly puzzled when they recover consciousness in Kamaloka after death. The condition in which the new arrival finds himself differs so radically from what he has been led to expect that it is no uncommon case for him to refuse to at first believe that he has passed through the portals of death at all. Indeed, of so little practical value is our much vaunted belief in the immortality of the soul that most people consider the very fact that they are still conscious an absolute proof that they have not died. The horrible doctrine of eternal punishment, too, is responsible for a vast amount of most pitiable and entirely groundless terror among those newly arriving in the Kamaloka, who in many cases spend long periods of acute mental suffering before they can free themselves from the fatal influence of that hideous blasphemy and realize that the world is governed not according to the caprice of some demon who gloats over human anguish, but according to a benevolent and wonderfully patient law of evolution. Many members of the class we are considering do not really attain an intelligent appreciation of this fact at all, but drift through their astral interlude in the same aimless manner in which they have spent the physical portion of their lives. Thus, in Kamaloka, exactly as on Earth, there are few who comprehend something of their position and know how to make the best of it. And the many who have not yet acquired that knowledge and are there just as here, the ignorant are rarely ready to profit by the advice or example of the wise. But whatever grade the entity's intellect may be, it is always a fluctuating and on a whole a gradually diminishing quantity. For the lower manas is being drawn in opposite direction by the higher triad which acts on it from above its level on the kama, which operates from below, and therefore it oscillates between the two attractions, with an ever-increasing tendency towards the former as the kamic forces wear themselves out. And here comes in the evil of what is called at seances the development of a spirit through a medium, a process the object of which is to intensify the downward pull of the kama to awaken the lower portion of the entity from the natural and desirable unconsciousness into what it is passing, and thus to prolong unnaturally its existence in the Kamaloka. The peculiar danger of this will be seen when it is recollected that the real man is all the while steadily withdrawing into himself, and is therefore, as time goes on, less and less able to influence or guide this lower portion, which nevertheless, until the separation is complete, has the power to generate karma, and under the circumstances is obviously far more likely to add evil than good to its record. Thus, the harm done is threefold. First, the retardation of the separation between the manas and the kama, and the consequent waste of time and prolongation of the interval between two incarnations. Secondly, the extreme probability, almost accounting to certainty, that a large addition will be made to the individual's evil karma, which will then have to be worked out in future births. Thirdly, the terrible danger that this abnormal intensification of the force of kama may eventually enable the latter to entangle the whole on the lower manas inextricably, and so cause the entire loss of an incarnation. Though such a result at this last mentioned is happily uncommon, is a thing that has happened more than once, and in very many cases where the evil has fallen short of this ultimate possibility, the individual has nevertheless lost much more of his lower manas by this additional entanglement with the kama than he would have done to left it to withdraw to himself quietly as nature had intended. All right, so we're going to leave that there. Boy, good stuff getting into the the different things seen after death and those realms. I mean, if you read the Tibetan Book of the Dead and a lot of these ancient things, I mean, there's so much that is put there to trick you and to get you to incarnate back to Earth. And this is what the Freemasons and the Rosicrucians have known about for centuries, is how to forego that, the Buddhists as well, to end the suffering so you don't reincarnate back down here on Earth and into another slave body. But again, that's one of the biggest things they want to keep from us, along with all the other secrets of who we are, what we are, where we came from, and what our ultimate real true power is. And that's really the main secret of the controllers themselves. How much potential we have, our potential of what we can achieve and what we have inside of us and what we're able to do is probably the most guarded secret that these people have, because if it ever got out, there would no longer be a power structure. Because we're no longer would we need a hierarchy. And I think that has to be the ultimate goal. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. That's TheGlobalReality.com. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and being with us here tonight. Please use the chip-in banner or to support us for the network, or use it for the Rockwall film budget we have that's ends on Friday. Please help us out. Please help us reach that goal. And again, $100 gets you you're going to get your name first on the list to get a DVD package for free when it's out. $500 or more will get you co-producer credit. So TheGlobalReality.com, please help us meet that goal, because I'm going to be going out of town to shoot for this film this weekend, and got to get that done. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you. We'll see you next time. You guys have yourselves a great night. Take care.